Welcome to the WP Builds Podcast, bringing you the latest news from the WordPress community. Now, welcome your hosts, David Wormsley and Nathan Wrigley.
Hello there and welcome once again to the WP Builds Podcast. You've reached episode number 376, entitled Exploring Typography and Accessibility with Peachy Neri. It was published on Thursday the 6th of June 2024. Before I begin my conversation with Peachy, a few bits of housekeeping. The first thing to mention is that if you want to subscribe to what we do on WP Builds, which is typically a podcast like you're listening to now, which comes out on a Thursday, but also the This Week in WordPress show, which is recorded on a Monday and then comes out on a Tuesday, well, head over to wpbuilds.com/subscribe and give us your email address and we will send you emails about those bits of content and pretty much nothing else. If you would like to advertise on the podcast, we are very happy to hear from you. wpbuilds.com/advertise and you'll hear from a couple of our happy sponsors in just a moment. Another thing to say is that Peachy has very, very kindly given us a coupon code for her upcoming Accessibility Masterclass. It's running between the 18th and 20th of June in 2024, so not too far away. And you can use the coupon code WPBuilds13 to get yourself a discount. Find the links in the show notes at WPBuilds.com. Search for episode number 376 and scroll down to the bottom, where all of the links are housed. The other thing to mention is that I'm going to be at WordCamp Europe in Torino next week, so there won't be a podcast episode. I'll be busy there. But if you find me and you'd like a chat, that would be really nice. Come and say hi. As you probably know, I'm fairly good at talking, so it wouldn't bother me in the slightest if you came and tapped me on the shoulder. I'd love to get into a conversation with anybody that happens to listen to our podcast. See you there. The WP Builds Podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients and get 30% off new purchases. You can find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. That's go.me/WPBuilds. We're also sponsored by Bluehost. Bluehost, redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud. Managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. That's bluehost.com/cloud. And sincere heartfelt thanks go out to GoDaddy Pro and Bluehost for their ongoing support of the WP Builds podcast. Right, what have we got for you today? Well, as I said, it's an episode with Peachy Neri. She's talking to us today all about accessibility and typography and how, in her opinion, typography is one of the first things that you need to worry about on your website and how it directly links to accessibility. We really get into that, but also of great interest maybe is a brand new show that I did with Peachy Neri. We're calling it You and I. Check it out. You know, she talks about you and I. And if you head to wpbuilds.com and you search in the menu at the very, very top, there's an archives menu. And if you search down for You and I archive, you'll be able to find the very first show that we recorded. And Peachy really gets into the weeds of this topic and why she thinks it's not only the right thing to do to treat accessibility as an important thing, but a profitable thing to do as well because of all of the new legislation which is coming down and also the fact that you're tapping into a giant market, all the people who have some kind of accessibility need. Anyway, we get into all of that. Peachy gives us loads of data about why this is important and she binds it all around the subject of typography. So I hope that you enjoy it. I am joined on the podcast by Peachy Neri. Hello, Peachy.
Hello, Nathan. Thank you so much for having me, not for the first time.
No, we've had many chats. Actually, we chat a lot. I'd say one of the people that I chat to most online. is you. We chat in all sorts of ways, Slack and video calls and all sorts. But it's been a while since we've had you on the podcast, but you're back. And we're going to talk a little bit about accessibility and typography in particular. Before we do that, though, for those people that don't know you, can I just give you a 2-minute slot to give us your bio? Tell us a little bit about you, your background, your interest in typography and web design and all of that. So you've got 2 minutes. The clock is running. Go.
2 minutes is almost too long. I am a designer who started to learn how to design by designing books a long time ago. Therefore, typography was really my main focus and I absolutely loved it. And this was before the internet, which kind of ages me. But I was famous in my very small company that I founded with a group of friends. We were doing arts publishing, exhibition catalogs and art books. And I was famous for being able to identify a typeface anywhere. And I always got it right. We had this book, big, huge book, thick with typefaces. And I loved it. I wonder who has it now, actually. So that's where my interest in typography started. And then I pivoted into web design with WordPress quite a few years ago now, at least a decade or longer, actually. Scary. I think my first blog was 2009. And then I had to adapt my skills to the internet, obviously, because it's, even though design principles remain the same, but it's a different skill set entirely. And above all, it's a very different mindset. When I was a book designer and successively a creative designer creating images, I never thought about accessibility, and I'm not even ashamed to say that. It just didn't come into it. With books, yeah, you need to make your books legible, obviously, but it was a very different mindset. And then a few years ago, I started realizing that if you want to talk about UX, good user experience, and teach good user experience, you can't bypass accessibility. It's fundamentally an essential part of a good experience, because everybody should have a good experience on the web, regardless of ability. So that's where we are now. I don't know if I filled 2 minutes or exceeded them.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, that's great. So so we've got a little bit of a background on you. Just apropos of nothing, just segueing just for a minute. So do you ever wish that you were still doing like print and books? Is there a part of you which regrets at any moment stepping into the web and dropping the print stuff? Or has the print industry become, I don't know, just has it dwindled as the internet has grown?
If anybody here in the audience has a book project to give me, can I please have it right now? I miss it so much. It was so much easier.
Oh, books, I see. Yeah, yeah.
Books don't move. You know, books do not move. You set it and that's it. That's the way it looks. Oh my God. But the thing is that I don't miss it enough to actually get back into it, because I could. I still have a huge portfolio. I did books for cultural institutions of the caliber of like the National Gallery, the Tate Gallery. I've worked with big publishing companies. I could presumably do it, but I don't know. Maybe I would get bored now. I'm not sure. The creative design, yes, please. Again, that's something that would probably merit its own podcast. Maybe we decide that we change the subject. It does have to do with accessibility, because one of the last talks that I presented at UX Copenhagen and Beyond Telerand, which is a conference in Berlin and Düsseldorf. Mine was in Berlin, and it was also accepted at Ally Toronto, but I wasn't able to go in the end, is precisely about how to balance creativity and accessibility. And there are two things that happen on the web that people mostly seem to equate animation with creativity. And I completely disagree with that, because I have a vestibular disorder and reckless animation makes me sick. And that's kind of the crux of my talk, which is available online for free on the UX Copenhagen YouTube channel or on Beyond Telerand. If you look for Pictionary, you'll find me.
We'll put those links in the show notes, by the way. We'll make sure that we get those off you before the end of the recording. Okay.
It's a, I mean, it's a fun talk, I think, because it's sort of very out of left field and people laughed when I delivered it. So hopefully it's nice. But so it's a real thing for me because I think one thing that I do miss in the way that I see web design being done or product design as well, which is something else I'm involved in, is that creativity isn't deployed very often. And I have many ideas on how to use creativity online in a way that I hardly ever see done. So again, if anybody's listening and has a project that could do with a purely creative mind that also knows the web very well and knows UX design and accessibility, I am here. Let's talk. I would love to do that.
Oh,
so
nice.
Yes, I do miss that. I mean, because for a while in my life, I used to watch films for a living and come up with concepts for film season campaigns, film posters. It was fun.
Nice. Yeah.
I mean, who wouldn't miss that?
I used to love getting magazines and things like that. But honestly, my consumption of paper-based media has just, it just dropped off a cliff, really, since the internet came along. I have this expectation that, you know, everything's going to be available online. And so my ignorant supposition is that the internet hollowed out the opportunities for people who were into book design and magazine design and all of those kind of things. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's work there. But anyway, let's get on to the subject of today. So
sorry to interrupt, but we always do that to one another, so I think it's fine. We do. I think that print is like vinyl. It will come back. It's not gone. It's different, but it's not gone. So that's all I'm going to say.
Well, the magazine shelves in my local post office are full. There's no difference today with the amount of content that's available. It's just that in my unique case, I don't tend to dwell there and buy it anymore. But then I am habituated to doing everything on the internet. So maybe I'm a unique case. Yeah. But anyway, okay, great. So when we decided to do this podcast episode, I reached out to Peacher and we had a little tiny back and forth about what we do and came up with this interesting sentence, which is going to be the thread which runs through this whole episode. And the sentence goes like this. Want to get started with accessibility? Start with typography. Now, just to paint a little bit of a background into that, accessibility is probably more important now. It's certainly more talked about now than it ever has been on the web. If we rewind the clock like 5 years, I feel like, SEO was all the rage and then Core Web Vitals was all the rage and all sorts of different things. And at the minute, it feels like accessibility and sustainability are two topics which are of real interest. Now, this isn't just driven, though, by curiosity or a moral obligation to do the right thing. This is also being driven by legislation. And I'm going to read, because you provided me with this, because I probably would have butchered it. The EU directive or act, the accessibility law, which is going to come into force on the 28th of June, 2025. So, dear listener, at the time of recording, you've got just over a year to get this into place. This is compelling us to take accessibility seriously. So and I don't know what the caveats are in terms of, you know, if it's a government-based website or a mom-and-pop shop website, if there's any difference about, you know, the audience or the amount of employees that a company must have in order for that to take effect. Nevertheless, the train is in motion. Legislation is coming into place to make accessibility important. And your sentence, which you provided me, want to get started with accessibility, start with typography, that kind of felt a little bit counterintuitive. I wouldn't have made the leap straight to typography. So, okay, I'm laying it out for you. I'll give you the floor. Why? Why is typography the first piece of the jigsaw puzzle when we would think about accessibility?
Okay, so let's say that you're still serving clients, Nathan, and a client comes to you and they need a new website and they hire which would be amazing. Clients don't usually do that, but they hire a copywriter and someone to write the content. You are a good web designer, so what you do tell them, that's great that you did that, because the first thing that you need to think about when you build a website is the content. That's where we start from, isn't it?
Typically,
or in the best case scenario, that doesn't always happen, but that's the way it should happen. What is content made of?
Do you mean in terms of text? It's text on the screen, text. I guess, in most cases, yeah.
It's text and it's also images, but I have actually in the past few years, I have designed quite a few websites that actually had virtually no images. So
yeah, it feels like the default would be text and a bit of images, and most of the time, at least text, very rarely just images. I can't actually bring to mind a website where there's only images. There must be some, but it's a combination of text and images, and text is the big brother in the room, if you like. It kind of, you know, the images go to qualify the text, not the other way around sometimes. Yeah, okay.
Not the other way around. And therefore, what is text expressed by, if not typography? That's the first thing that you need to think about. Also, when I say start with typography, I take the concept a little bit into an area that people don't think about that much, which is the fact, because if you, what is typography for you, Nathan? Actually, I'm going to turn it around. If I say typography, what do you think of?
I'm literally thinking of the shapes of letters. So, you know, I'm thinking of the way that the capital T looks in a particular font and how it would differ from a capital T in another font, and whether it's, you know, got bits at the edges. And I know there's technical vocabulary around that, but, you know, how it's shaped. If I was to draw it with a pencil on a piece of paper, what would be the outline that I'd have to trace? That's what I think when I'm thinking font, but not just the letter T. I'm thinking about the, you know, that there's some duplication of that the style is represented from the T to the A to the B, and there's some consistency there, but also there's like a feel to it. There's like a fun one, that's a serious one, that's the kind of thing I would see in the Times newspaper, and that's the sort of thing I would see in a comic book. That's what I think when I'm thinking typography.
And you wouldn't be wrong. I can't say that, because also if you look at the etymology of the word, that's what the suffix graphy comes from Greek, and it means, you know, sign. There's anything that is expressed with a written sign. Therefore, yeah, you are right. It does mean that. But when you look at it from the content perspective, which I always do because I am a firm believer in the content first approach when you design anything, not just a website. I think the content dictates everything. Content dictates the design, it dictates the visual style, it dictates the user experience. That's where you should start from. So for me, that's where typography start from. And I'll demonstrate why that is true, because when you start from content, what's the first thing that you do in terms of actual website structure and markup?
Are you asking me?
Well, I'm asking you because you're always
we have this thing where you pass it over to me. So repeat the question. I want to just encapsulate that perfectly in my head before I answer it.
When you start from content, and that we ascertain that in this case we're talking, we consider content as text, because usually, typically, that's where you start from. How do you approach writing your content and structuring your content when you do it for the web? What's the first thing that you do? That's
really interesting, because I'm immediately jumping, because I'm a WordPress user. My head immediately goes into like a theme. So I'm thinking, where does the heading, let's say it's a single blog post, so it's a, you know, like it could be a news article or something like that. I'm thinking, where does the heading go? What font would I choose for that heading? Where would it sit? What would the font size be? And how would I separate it, I don't know, maybe with a different font for the body of the text or something like that. So I'm trying to visually put it on the page. I'm trying to see it. And yeah. I don't know if that's where you're going, but that's what I'm, in my head, that's where I'm going.
It's kind of, it kind of is and it kind of isn't, because to me, and actually interestingly, I'm doing a webinar series for one.com, for Group One and one.com, and it's for free available on YouTube. I'm doing it in Spanish and in English, where I talk about the web process. And we start from content. And what I tell people is that actually you don't get into the visual design until much later. That's my approach, even though I am 1,000% a visual designer, but that's my approach, starts from the structure first. And it only gets into visual design much later, because visual design is much faster if you've sorted out the content and the structure first. So what you are saying is correct, but I wouldn't. I recommend that you do your that you lay out your content in a Google Doc, for instance, because that way you can create a skeleton structure using your headings correctly. So to me, typography, it starts way before you actually choose a typeface, because you are setting, you are structuring your content using headings correctly.
Okay,
that is
right.
The first step towards accessibility.
Can I just
that
remind
is your
then?
First
so
step.
If I so in the scenario that you're describing, I open up a Google Doc and I'm just laying out what my, in this case, I said a news article. Let's go with that. I'm laying out the headings and the main text, and I'm just getting all of the different pieces. So it might have a heading at the top, an author underneath that. It might then go into, you know, the main paragraph text with, I don't know, an area at the bottom for a bunch of links. And you're trying to structure that so that the headings are in the right place. You've got an H1 at the top, and then there's no other H1s, and then there's an H2, and there's no other H2s nested with inside that H2. If you want another one, it's got to be an H3 or an H4 or whatever it may be.
Exactly.
So it's about putting a typical article, in this case, on a Google Doc, laying out the structure. You don't care what it looks like. You just use the default Google Doc font, whatever that is. I'm sure you know. But then once you've got that structure, you then take it over and you overlay it onto the template of the visual side of things. I see.
Exactly.
Got it.
That's what I mean, because to me, you described what typography means to you, which is the visual side of it. And like I said, you're not wrong. But for me, typography goes way deeper and it goes into the structure first. So there's the unseen part and the seen part. And on the web, this is absolutely essential, because if you don't start from that, you don't have an accessible website. A website that doesn't have its content structured in the right way fundamentally creates problems from the point of view of accessibility. And as because, and I'll explain
actually,
why.
Actually, can I just interrupt? Sorry, we're going to do this, aren't we? Can I just interrupt there? Because the audience for this podcast is fairly broad. I'd imagine there's a bunch of people listening to this who've heard the word accessibility a bunch of times, and they know that that's a thing. But maybe they're using WordPress with a tool like a page builder, which enables them to structure the content without any regard for the way that they're using their H1s and H2s and paragraphs and all of that. They're just making it look right. And, you know, so they'll put a paragraph text in where the heading should be and increase the font size. Now that looks like a heading, but it's a paragraph. Now, why does that matter to somebody with a screen reader? So I know I'm asking you to explain something which is self-evident to you, but given the nature of the audience of this podcast, just outline what a person with, for example, a screen reader or any other accessibility concern, if you want to drop them in as well, what are the difficulties that are presented by that kind of cavalier approach to laying out your web pages with the incorrect H's and P's and whatever?
The main thing about it is that, by the way, I completely agree. I never take anything for granted. There's no reason why anybody should know what accessibility means in terms of the correct HTML structure. And the thing is that a screen reader is a tool that reads web pages for you. There's an art. It's not that easy to use it. I mean, you have to learn using it. It's interesting in and of itself. But one of the things that it does is that it uses HTML structure to make sense of a web page. So therefore, if someone using a screen reader lands on your page or on your article, your blog post, whatever, They are going to, first of all, scan through the page using the headings. If you are sighted and use a sight to scan through a page, then the visual hierarchy that you should set with the headings allows you to scan through the page and decide whether it's of interest to you and which bits of it are particularly of interest to you. A screen reader does this by listing and reading the headings. It's like a list of content. It's a list of
contents. Yeah, like a table of contents almost.
Table, thank you, is the word I was looking for. Yeah. It's a table of contents. So if you don't do that correctly using HTML markup the way it was meant to be used, then you are giving a big problem to the person who lands there and doesn't know how to make sense of it because they don't have the time to read the whole page. That's not how we read on the web anyway. Most of it's proven by research that we all really just scan a page. We don't read all of it. We only read the bits that we are interested in. So that's what correct HTML structure does. And it's really not that difficult. And it has numerous side effects. The first one is, it's accessibility, obviously, but it's also SEO, because using correct HTML structure and using your keywords in your headings and so on, and organizing your content in a way that makes sense to Google when he reads it, is, I'm not an SEO expert, but I am told that it's one of the things that you need to do for SEO. And then it also helps hugely to organize your thoughts, and it makes it so much easier to write your content. And to me, that is typography as well, because that is the invisible side of typography. It's like we all have a skeleton. Without our skeleton, we can't exist. So to me, the typography, the way you see it, is the external side of it. It's our skin. It's the clothes that we wear. It's that. But the HTML structure is the skeleton. And you cannot separate the two. If I teach typography, I can't not teach correct HTML, semantic HTML structure, and also how to use it and how to not use it. And I even go as far as considering other interactive elements of a web page as part of typography, like how you should style your links or how you should even write your links. So I take it a little bit further, because I really firmly believe that in the same way that we have to take care of our insides as well as our outsides, if I know it doesn't quite, it's not probably not correct English, but you know, foreigner, you cannot have a good typography if you haven't sorted these things out, if you only care about the visual aspect. Because
okay, I'm just going to interrupt there a moment, because I want to just lay out what I'm thinking here. And that is that if you're a sighted person like me, I rock up to a website, let's say it's a news website, and I do exactly what you've said, right? I'll take in the headline, I'll read that, I'll scan it with my eyes, I'll take it in, and I'll make a judgment about whether I want to continue at that point. I might begin the article and then kind of have an intuition that this little bit is going to be of no interest to me. So I'll flick through and then I'll see a heading, and the heading will tell me what's coming next. So I'll have an intuition then, okay, well, I want to read that or I don't want to read that. Maybe I'll take in a few of the headings and then back out of the article altogether, or just dive deeper. So I can take that in with my eyes. But if you're using a screen reader, if you haven't got those things structured and nested correctly, then the screen reader doesn't know where to put the person. You know, so in my head, I've taken a paper news article. So I've bought a newspaper, I've put the article on my table, and I've cut it to pieces with scissors. And then I've taken those bits of that and I've just jumbled them up. I've just thrown them on the table. And now I've said to a sighted person, read that article back to me. And that person just cannot, because there's no structure. It doesn't begin in the way you're expecting. You can't find out, well, what comes second? What's the third bit? And is that kind of it? If you don't structure things, then the person with the screen reader doesn't know where to go next. They're misdirected. They're not directed at all. They just can't get to what they want. It's a mystery.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, fundamentally, you have nailed it. And I think it's hard for those of us who do use sight to guide us to understand what it feels like.
Right.
And
right.
It goes, of course, it goes way further than that, that it's very interesting how it's so interesting to start working with blind people who use a screen reader and see how differently they conceive the web to us. And even when you've done things that you think are completely accessible, maybe because you thought in visual terms anyway, because you do, you know, it's difficult to think, it's very difficult to completely pretend that you don't have eyes, then they may actually interpret your content in a different way. And it has happened to me a few times, and it's always so enlightening. And you are, I don't want to say half the way there, because there is so much to take into consideration about if you want to really build a compliant website. And by the way, there's no such thing as a fully compliant website, because the guidelines are not even entirely clear. And there's no such thing as building a compliant website which is then compliant forever. These are the things about accessibility. We can only do our best, and we can only keep trying. But the point is that if you start by building your content accessibly in the way that we have very summarily described, then you are very much on the way there. And to me, the content design is part of typography. I know maybe not everybody sees it like this, but I do see it like this, because ultimately, if you are going to style a link, you need to know why you should style it in a certain way and what that certain way is in order to make it accessible. You can't separate the two things. So you also need to know how you should write a link in a way that's descriptive, because another thing that screen readers do, or also other assistive technology, like for instance, if you're using a keyboard and you're not using a mouse, which is something that a lot of people do, and a lot of assistive technology relies on that. So links are essential, because that's where you can navigate to. And if you use a link such as read more, taken out of context, it doesn't mean anything. It could be relating to anything. So your links should be written in a way that's descriptive. And when I teach typography, I also teach this, because I don't see how I can teach you what it should look like if I don't teach you also what the essence should be and why.
I'm beginning to get a handle on it. I must admit, when we began this conversation, I was a little confused, but I am getting it. You've got this sort of foundational layer that the web enables you, unlike print, where there's no H1, there's no H2. It's just, you know, it's bigger. So it's a headline and it's at the top. Whereas on the web, there's this whole component layer underneath. You know, you've got these HTML tags that you've got to put in, and if you don't do that right, you are basically messing the website up for yourself, because Google won't particularly like it, but also a proportion of the population who can't access that kind of stuff. So yeah, there's this foundational layer underneath. A question I've got actually from this is, obviously, if you're a designer, if you're a web designer, let's just use that term, website builder, something like that, you can learn this kind of stuff, and you can ensure that your theme layer, if you like, enforces that. So the title will always be in an H1 and it will look like this, and the paragraphs will be in a P tag and the headings will be in the correct da da da, all of that. But then you hand your website over to the client and you let them rip. I guess there's a conversation to be had more and more with them, because in the modern WordPress editing experience, just like there was in the old editing experience, but more so in the new experience, it's kind of easy to not get that right. You know, you put in a heading and, oh, it's a heading. Great. Next one. Oh, I'll put in another heading, but it's underneath that one and there's another one. You've got to educate your clients on this as well, I suppose.
Absolutely. And I think that we should all see that as an opportunity, because I have I deliver workshops to my clients on how to write content accessibly and how to even write posts accessibly on social media or on Facebook and on LinkedIn and so on. Because like I said earlier, and thank you for mentioning it again, accessibility is not just done and dusted. You need to keep at it. And especially with clients, that's an educational journey that we need to get them on. And I never like to lead with fear, but the thing is, it's not even fear, it's a reality. There is a deadline looming. And unless you're a micro company with, you know, less than five people, I think, is what the Act, the European Accessibility Act says, then you won't be affected. But whereas before it was only governmental or other types of websites that were affected by accessibility laws, now any website will be. If you have an e-commerce website, you will be affected by that. And anybody can report you. So the process usually is that the first port of call is someone decides to report you because they can't use your website because it's not accessible enough. They speak to you first. That's the first thing that they would do is reach out to you and say, look, I can't use your website. Can you please help me out? And that's a great thing, because then you can go, okay, great. Maybe this person will go on buying from you. By the way, I'm researching all of this because I am giving a talk in September at Hatch Conference in Berlin, September 2024. We are in May right now, about the European Accessibility Act. And I always want to make sure that I don't just scare people into it. I just say, look, it's an opportunity. Accessibility is an opportunity. It's not a limitation. And that is about creativity as well, by the way. But again, that's a different episode. So I am researching and I am consistently finding out that companies that invest in accessibility make more money, because their accessibility market is huge. Because also there's no such thing as we are only ever temporarily abled. We are only a slipping on a banana away from having a broken arm and not being able to use the mouse, for instance. Or yeah, even if you're a young parent holding a child, there are so many situations in which we need accessibility. And I mean, there's so much research that proves that everybody is benefits from accessibility features. There are so many examples of that. But mostly for online businesses, it's insane to not go accessible, because you are missing out on I think I read recently that the revenue, it's like the internal revenue of China, the globally, which is, you know, it's a lot of money. It's like billions that are hidden in the accessibility market. So why would you not want to make money out of that? It's crazy not to. So
yeah,
that's, no, and I know it was. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say it's carrot and stick. The stick is the legislation, telling you that by June 2025, you know, you have to be mindful of this, whether or not you're able to do everything all in one go, or whether you just embark on that journey. But there's also the carrot, and the carrot in this case is that you are making the web, well, morally, you're making the web a better place for those people who would be enabled by your accessible website, but also your bottom line, potentially. If you're a shop, for example, or you're selling something, trying to attract visitors, grow an email list, whatever it may be, you're going to be affected by this in a positive way, because there's this, and I think you use the word hidden kind of market that you will suddenly enable. You like a brand new audience that can consume your stuff that couldn't consume it prior to you making your website accessible. Okay.
The percentage that I hear a lot is 25%. You're potentially expanding your audience by 25%. Wow. And if you are a web design agency or a web design professional in any shape or form selling services to clients, it's a really big opportunity to improve your service and to sell new services, such as, for instance, educating them on how to create accessible content and how to do the bare minimum to make sure that your website is accessible. And I mean, it really hit a, it's hitting a nerve at the moment, because I see clients that had a website that was as accessible as can be when it was launched. And now I see them creating blog posts or even social media material using their colors in a non-accessible way, even though at the time of the guidelines being issued, there was a lesson on how to use them accessibly. But now that I have a new member of staff in, that just gets excited about pale green text with background with white text on it because it looks pretty. And I'm like, yeah, no. So it's an opportunity for you to say, listen, we need to have another conversation about that you obviously charge for. But I'm not saying that you want to milk the clients. You want to make sure that also they deliver the content in a way that everybody can use it so that they can make more money ultimately. It's always the bottom line. And for another reason, for this client as well, actually, I was looking into, because then it to me, UX and accessibility are one and the same thing. You cannot have a good user experience without having an accessible user experience, because you're excluding the famous 25% of the audience from that good experience. And how is that good UX? It just isn't. You can't call it good UX if it's not accessible. And like I said, like everyone, I do my best. And sometimes I get people to check that I know that use screen readers or other assistive tech to check my pages and say what works and what doesn't work, and never feel like it's personal. And we're only ever here to get better. Like I said, perfection doesn't exist, but we can do our best. And honestly, starting from typography is the absolute first thing. And if you only have accessible typography, including the hidden part, including the skeleton of typography, which is the HTML markup, you are already very much on the way there. And then when you get started, it's hard to stop. When you start, it really is really, really hard to stop. And you start getting more and more into it and getting even excited by the
You get habituated. Like, and yeah, it's interesting you were saying there about, you know, there's like this ongoing education opportunity for your clients where, you know, if they onboard a new member of staff, they'll probably, you know, there'll be an SOP for that. And part of that will be, you know, have your photograph taken, sign these documents. And it maybe is, and now go and have an hour with somebody at the agency to teach you how to use the website correctly in an accessible way. And there's an opportunity to sell that as a service. And like you said, it's not milking the client. It's actually helping them out. Yeah, well, I feel a segue coming on. And my segue is, so Peacher, you obviously are deeply into this. You create training materials, you create courses. Is there anything that you've got out there in the web, a course that you're promoting at the moment that would help people to do this?
So I have three things, because obviously we do need to think about the visual bit as well. That's an important part of the bit. So we need to learn about that as well. So I have a free accessibility primer, which is a very, very basic course that's more for those who really need to educate their clients or their own team or their own bosses as to why we need accessibility and how and who and so on. It's very simple and it doesn't pretend to teach you. It's just the basics of it. Then I have an accessible typography 101 course, which is cheap. It's below $30. I'm saying that because I can't remember the price.
It's around there.
But it's cheap. And it honestly, if you just follow the advice given to you in that course, you will be doing much better than a lot of other websites currently on the internet, because according to the WebAIM Million, which is an annual report on the top 1 million websites on the internet, 96.3% of the top 1 million websites have accessibility issues, and 67% of them or thereabouts are about visual design. And guess what visual design is? It's typography. And the advice that I give in that cheap and cheerful course is really, really quite valuable, in my opinion, obviously mine. And then I have a much more in-depth accessibility workshop that is going to happen in June, together with the UX guru, Joe Natoli, who I am converting to accessibility. And he's great, and he's going to be in the workshop with me, and it's going to be three sessions on the 18th, 19th, and 20th of June. But knowing myself, I said that with all this enthusiasm and confidence, and I am going to check my calendar right now to say that I haven't said something that is completely wrong. Yeah, 18th, 18th and 19th and 20th of June. So it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday of that week in June. And we're
given
go
that this is a podcast and it can be consumed at any point in the future as well, do you have an intention to make that content available after you've done the sessions on those particular days? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, I think I think the recordings will be available for anybody who signs up for it, definitely there will be a recording. I might make the recording available as a to be bought separately from the workshop, but I don't know what the value of that is, because I think the workshop, you just need to be there, basically. That's the value of it, that you get the live access. However, the plan is to run it 3-4 times a year. Which I would like to do, because as happens with all my courses, there's always new things that I've learned and new things that I want to add or that I want to concentrate on. And that also come from the feedback that I get from the students that say, okay, that was great. Well, it'd be nice to maybe go deeper into this side of it. So that's what's going to happen.
And okay, there's so even if you've finished the live sessions and somebody listens to this, we'll stick a link in the show notes, which will enable you to at least get an orientation of what Peach's decided.
And there will be a WP Builds discount.
That's great too. Nice, thank you. We'll embed that either at the beginning of the post, or we'll put it somewhere. It'll be available to you, dear listener. Okay, we're closing on the 45-minute mark. That's a kind of sweet spot for me. So, Peacher, just before we knock it on the head, as we say in the UK, where can we find you? What's the best social media, email address, whatever it is? Where's the best place to find you if people want to take this further?
LinkedIn is where I'm the most active, and I'm Peacher Neri, and it's PICCIA, and you can't go wrong.
There's only you, isn't there? There's only
there is only me. I am also on Twitter, and my handle is Peacher, which is a bit like having Jack as your handle.
Yeah, that's okay. I know. You're not going to get Nathan, that's for sure.
No. I joined a long time ago, but I'm not that active on it.
Go to LinkedIn and search for Peacher Neri. Again, links in the show notes. As best we can, we'll dig those out. Peacher Neri, thanks for chatting to us today all about typography and accessibility and how the two relate, collide, whatever the right word is for that. I really appreciate you chatting to me today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed that. Absolute pleasure chatting to Peacher about that subject. Don't forget that if you head to wpbuilds.com, search for episode number 376, you will be able to avail yourself of a discount if you use the offer code WPBuilds13, you're going to be able to get yourself a discount off Peacher's Accessibility Masterclass, which is running from the 18th of June, 2024. The WP Builds podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. You can find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. That's go.me/WPBuilds. We're also sponsored by Bluehost. Bluehost, redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud. Managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. That's bluehost.com/cloud. And sincere heartfelt thanks go out to GoDaddy Pro and Bluehost for their ongoing support of the WP Builds podcast. Okay, that's all I've got for you today. Just to say, if you're in WordCamp Europe, please come and say hi. It'd be very nice to catch up with some of the people that listen to this podcast. There won't be a podcast episode next week, so we're taking a week break and we'll be back the week after that. But have a good week. Have a good 2 weeks. Stay safe. Here comes some cheesy music. Bye-bye for now.